It's like going on a date for the first time with someone. You are paying attention like a hawk. You are paying attention to their body language, to their laugh, to the texture of their sweater, to did they touch you accidentally or on purpose? Did they order a second drink? Did they hesitate to pay the bill? Whatever you're paying attention to, you're hyper-focused. And that is what I want people directing to themselves.
Herzlich willkommen zum Female Leadership Podcast. Mein Name ist Vera Strauch und ich bin Host hier im Podcast, in dem es darum geht, dass du deinen ganz eigenen Stil im Job und Leben findest und deinen Weg mutig und selbstbewusst gehst. In dieser Folge geht es um das Ich. Wie finde ich mich und das, oder finde mich vielleicht auch wieder und das wahrhaft stimmige Auftreten für mich. Dazu habe ich einen ganz tollen Gast, Sarah Kuburik. Ist Psychotherapeutin und Life-Coach mit eigener Online-Praxis und Privatpraxis, Autorin, Speakerin, Kolumnistin, geboren im ehemaligen Jugoslawien, aufgewachsen in Kanada, studiert und gelebt in Europa, Mittleren Osten, Nordafrika, hat sie vieles gesehen. Mittlerweile lebt sie in Australien und einigen von euch ist Sarah vielleicht bekannt von Instagram, denn dort betreibt sie mit über 1,7 Millionen FollowerInnen den Account Millennial Therapist, der Menschen bei großen Fragen unterstützt. Sie beschreibt es selbst als figure out who they are and why they are here and how they can show up in a world in a free, authentic and meaningful way. Und genau darum geht es heute auch in unserem Interview. Letztes Jahr ist Sarahs Buch erschienen, angekommen bei dir, akzeptiere, was ist, entdecke dich selbst und ändere dein Leben. Darin geht es vor allem darum, wie wir es in einer komplexen Welt schaffen, die Verbindung zu uns selbst zu finden und zu halten und Entfremdung, Ängsten, auch Verunsicherung zu begegnen. Und genau, diesen Fragen widmen wir uns heute in diesem Gespräch. Es geht vor allem um das Sich-Finden und das Erkennen der eigenen Werte, Bedürfnisse, das ehrliche Auftreten uns selbst gegenüber, aber natürlich auch anderen gegenüber. Wie finde ich in diese Stimmigkeit, Authentizität, Selbstverantwortung und auch die Freiheit, Entscheidungen für mich und für das große Ganze zu treffen? Ich freue mich riesig, dieses Gespräch mit dir zu teilen und wünsche dir ganz viel Freude und dann legen wir gleich mal los. Sarah, welcome to the show. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
The inscription of your book reads, to all who feel lost. And you write about self-loss and also finding yourself. How did you come to write this book? Maybe also, how did you come to write for those who feel lost?
I think it's always interesting to see what sorts of books individuals write. And for me, I wrote a book that I wish I had when I was 20. And this book didn't exist. And so I was going through this experience feeling incredibly alone and confused. And I just wanted to make sure that those who are going through something similar don't have to feel the same way. And my self-loss journey, you know, started really young. I would say that kind of the origin story, if you may, was, you know, through the wars in the Balkans and then immigrating to Canada. But then it really came to a head when I was 23, 24. That was the moment I realized I was lost. I think as people, sometimes we're lost without realizing it. Mm-hmm. And then that moment of realization is so crushing and so painful. And for me, that was the real unraveling. That was really the real suffering is when that started.
And how did you, can you talk a little bit more about your journey and assume in finding yourself?
Of course. Yeah, so I think something that I realized through this journey and through writing the book, I often don't like the English phrase of finding yourself. And the reason for that is that that means yourself exists out there and you had nothing to do with it. Your only job is to find it and then live it. And that's more essentialism, not existentialism. And so for me, I always had that issue of like, who designed this self? Why am I not a participant? How can I be someone other than who I am right now? And I really, for me, it was incredibly empowering to understand the degree of freedom I have and the degree of responsibility I have to actually create who I am. And that is not glamorous work. What that means is paying attention to every decision that you make. Every decision from when you're going to wake up to what coffee you're going to have, to what jobs you're going to take on, to what video you're going to record, to what podcast I'm going to come on. All of these decisions are incredibly deliberate because I understand there is no such thing as a neutral decision. Mm-hmm. Every decision either brings you closer to who you want to be, to aligns to how you perceive yourself, or it doesn't. And so my journey of creating myself was one of shedding a lot, letting go of a lot, grieving a lot, previous versions of me, people in my life, expectations, habits. And then it was replacing them with things that actually aligned and nurtured me.
How did you find what you want instead? Because I think it is oftentimes that we know we don't want what we have right now, but we're not so sure what it is we want instead.
Yeah, I think, and this is not a glamorous answer, it's trial and error. Right. Sometimes you know, and that's great. You have an inherent knowing. For example, I always knew I wanted to be a psychotherapist. The reason for that is just what I've survived, how I gain meaning through helping individuals that are living through hardship. That I knew. But there were a lot of things about myself I didn't know. And one of the only ways to find out was to try it. And this is why in my book, I'm not sure if you read my Julia Roberts example, but I will share with whoever's listening in case they haven't read the book. There's a movie called Runaway Bride from Julia, and Julia Roberts is the main character. And the premise of the movie is that there is a woman who leaves all these grooms at the altar and runs away. And a journalist heard about this and was so curious about her that he went to her little town and started to interview all her ex-fiancés and her. And while he was kind of investigating the story, he realized that she was shape-shifting for the men in her life. What that means is he would ask all these men, what kind of eggs does she like? Her name was Maggie in the movie. And one man would be like, boiled. The other one would be like scrambled. The third one would be like, you know, sunny side up. And he's like, how is that even possible? Then he would ask the man, what do you like? He'd be like, boiled, scrambled, sunny side up. And there is this scene in the movie where he's confronting Maggie, the journalist, and he goes, you're so lost, you don't even know what kind of eggs you like. And she goes, I'm not lost. That's just, you know, called changing your mind. And he's like, no, that's not changing your mind. That's not having a mind of your own. And what I find the most powerful is there's a couple scenes after, there is Julia Roberts as Maggie in her kitchen cooking 12 types of eggs and trying them. Mm-hmm. And it was this really like quick scene that I found so powerful. And I think sometimes in life, we want these definitive answers. We want this inner knowing that's going to guide us home, that's going to guide everything, which is really comforting. But I don't think it's always that simple. Sometimes life is truly about trying and seeing if you like something or not. Does it resonate with you or not? And I think there's something playful about existence. And so that was part of my takeaway. There were certain things that were really, you know, what I would call like my calling, things I really felt drawn towards. And then there were things I just have to try and see if it worked or not.
What would you recommend people who maybe lost touch with themselves or are unsure if it's really what they like, even if they try something, if they like mm-hmm. it or if it, so if I speak about myself, I'm not sure mm-hmm. if I like it. Because there are so many opinions out there and people expecting stuff from me. Mm-hmm. Do you have maybe techniques or a way to find your way back yeah. to what you really want?
I think sometimes I have two answers. One is certain things will just feel like home. There will be a sense of like belonging, a sense of home, a sense of depth, a sense of knowing. And we often miss it because we're not listening, we're not paying attention. And our body can be a really huge indicator. It's not just our mind. Our body will tell us through our body language, through its sensations, what it's feeling and what it's not feeling. The other thing I get my clients to do, and this is a really kind of funny exercise, is I will get them to tell me everything they did 5 hours prior to the session in like excruciating detail, as much detail as humanly possible. And as they talk about it, they're like, okay, then I opened the door, for example, and I'll go, did you like the door? And then they'll look at me like I'm crazy. They're like, what do you mean? Did I like the door? I mean, do you like your door? I don't know. I've never thought about the fact, do I like my door? I was like, okay, think about it now. Do you like your door? And they're like, what is there to like about a door? And we'll have this like long conversation. But that's because most of us are not paying attention. So many things in our life are just there. It came with the house. It came with the family. It came with the society. It came with whatever. And we're not doing the process of discerning, evaluating. And so I would say a lot of the times, if we don't know, that's because we haven't really asked. And I think that's the, and then really listened for that answer. So for me, a lot of it boils down to that self-awareness piece. And sometimes you might have to try something more than once to know if it really resonates or not.
This feeling like home, I think is, it's such a, not, I don't even say, wouldn't say picture, but it's something that resonates with me. And I think it really helps to, even if you have never or maybe just a few times experienced that feeling, to keep an open radar for it and really look for it. But that's something that, for example, for me in my job world, I think there was a time where I wasn't even thinking about that would be possible, because it felt so much like pretending, but not in a pretending way, more in a way of, okay, it is that way. How would I feel at home at work, you know, this feeling, this home feeling at work? But it's possible. And I think it helps to actively have an open mind for it.
For sure. I think we have, you know, normalized living inauthentic lives. We've normalized being lost. We've normalized not liking things in our life. And it's kind of like, well, that's how it is. Suck it up. And although I think part of it is true, you're never going to like everything about your life. If you can change it, change it. That's the part we don't teach people. We just go suck it up. That's what it is. That's what you're expected to do. That's what your parents did. That's what your friends were doing. Just do it. And I think there's something really harmful about that. Instead of going, there's going to be difficulties. There are going to be struggles. But whatever freedom remains, use it.
Yeah.
And if you can choose not to have a job you hate, choose it. There are people who could choose different professions and make a little less money. There's people that can choose to end their relationship, even though it's going to be painful. So many of us have choices that we do not utilize. And that's why a lot of us are living lives that we don't want to live.
Yeah. And with especially the big decisions, and that can also be the tough decisions that appear small, but are big for me. You have to face a certain discomfort, unknowing, you know, you have to go through maybe, I don't know, study again or, you know, face uncertainty. What do you recommend people to maybe find a different, or to approach this maybe a different way to make it easier to actually get into
do
the
that.
Action?
Even, yeah. I think one of the beliefs I had to let go of that really changed my life was that there was one right way to live. And that took so much anxiety off of me of like, maybe there's several things you'd be really good at. Maybe there is multiple people you could be in a relationship with that would make you happy. This sort of fate way, like you're fated to do certain things, or there's one right thing for you, is so much pressure. And it also takes away the joy of actually being alive. I had a friend once ask me, if you could know how your life would unfold till the day you died, would you want to know? And without even blinking, I went, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. What would be the point of living my life then? I think we have kind of killed the joy, or we have replaced the joy with fear when it comes to our existence. And the joy of making a mistake sometimes, and the joy of the unknown, and the thrill of the unexpected. And, you know, sometimes there's even beauty in the pain. And we have all said, no, that is terrible. You should just be scared, and you should just do what everyone else does. And your existence, if you go through life without feeling anything bad, you've succeeded. And I think sometimes by trying not to feel the bad things, we have also limited the joys and the beauties that we could be experiencing.
And I observe that there is fear instilled in so many aspects of life that we... And I would even say, because you were saying, mentioning it, this whole part of marriage and... you know, you have to find a partner and you have to live in this concept of partnership. And something that motivates me personally is to see that the liberation that individuals took inspired me so much. So knowing people, even if I don't know them personally, who chose deliberately a different path is something that gives me a lot of freedom. So I really like this this idea that I could be also someone who is liberating maybe a young girl, someone who is struggling and, you know, looking and saying, okay, no, that's the way you can also do this. Interesting, you know?
Yeah, I love that point. I think the more we all live authentically and freely, we give permission to others to do the same thing. We model this behavior. Right now, we want to talk about, you know, a lot of women have been modeled very limiting beliefs. They've been given a lot of structures. And I'm not saying all of it is bad, but I'm saying a lot of women don't feel like they can choose not to get married or can feel not to have children. A lot of these things are still very sensitive topics, even in 2024. And so I think, you know, if that's something that aligns with you, authentically not to get married or not to have kids, I think it's so important to live it out and model it to individuals so they know that's an option. And I'm not saying that's the right option for everyone, but it's so nice for people to see that there are options and they have the freedom of choice. So, so important, because I believe, like, as millennials, we haven't seen that much of that liberation in our parents' generation. There wasn't that much diversity in what our mothers or grandmothers have chosen to do for the most part. And so I think nowadays that's kind of shifting, and I think it's beautiful. And I love when I see people quit their jobs, for example. And I'm not suggesting you should quit your job, but when they go, hey, I had a great corporate job and I quit because he made me miserable, and now I knit sweaters for a living. You know, like, it doesn't matter what it is, but to me that is so brave. The details don't matter. It's the audacity to put yourself first and to just do what makes you happy that I think is so healthy. And it's such a beautiful model for those younger girls coming up into the world.
In some cases, people don't have a choice. I think it's rather the rare cases, but in some cases, things just happen and they are horrible, or they're exactly not what you wanted to happen. How to deal with that?
Yeah. And look, this is where I talk a lot about Frankl, in terms of, he's the one that insisted that humans always have a degree of freedom, even if it's freedom of attitude, even if it's freedom of creating meaning of your experiences. And he has lived through some of the worst things imaginable. And so I understand not everyone has the same privilege of freedom. And we all need to understand that. But I think in order to liberate someone or give them a sense of autonomy, it's always important to remind ourselves what freedom remains. Okay, mm-hmm. we're not free to quit our jobs, but what are we free to do? We're free mm-hmm. to choose how we think about it. We're free to choose what meaning we make of it. We're free to choose what we do outside of work. And so always trying to find where your freedom is, I think is really important. And it gets harder and harder depending on your context. But we don't do it as a way to like, we do it to liberate. We do it as a way to still make you feel like you're empowered. And that was really important for me when I felt like there weren't choices in my life to go, okay, but what is this tiny little choice that I can still make? And that made me feel like I was owning myself. And that was really, really important to me.
You were talking earlier about beliefs. Mm. Is there a way to, because sometimes I'm not aware of my, well, most of the times probably, I'm not aware of the beliefs, the underlying mm-hmm. yeah, opinions I have, what's true and what's not. What's a way mm-hmm. to find these beliefs, the things especially that are limiting me?
Yeah, it's really tough. I would say, you know, getting a piece of paper and just writing out everything you believe about, break it down into categories because otherwise it's too much. Everything you believe about your body, everything you believe about friendships, everything you believe about parenting, everything you believe about romantic love. And you will start to see very interesting themes generally. And then you can ask yourself, is this a theme that's liberating or is this a theme that's limiting? Is this a theme that serves me or is this a theme that or a belief that controls me? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a really kind of practical way of doing that. And also whenever we're scared to do something, and fear is not a negative emotion or a bad emotion. Sometimes mm-hmm. fear is very legitimate. You should listen to it because it's trying to protect you. But if you find that you're scared of a lot of things, sometimes I go, okay, what is the belief that's fueling this particular fear? So you're scared to relocate, okay, to live in a different city, for example. So then you would ask, what belief do I have? And it's like, I'm unlovable. I barely got people here to like me. So if I go somewhere else, I will die alone, whatever it is. And then that way you can also access some of those beliefs that are trying to control you.
Nice.
Thanks. That was practical. That's all I had to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And really helpful, I think, to choose this little inconvenience, mm-hmm. to sit down, take a piece of paper and a pen and start writing and then staying with it, I think. But once I start mm-hmm. with this also as a process, it can really help to get to know the self that you're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's how you become more intentional, more in control. And that's when you start to create yourself because mm-hmm. you understand all these things that are happening and you're choosing to either believe it or not. And you're making decisions based on either that belief or you're making a decision based on who you want to become and what aligns. And so I think it's just, it allows you to start that process of creation.
I'm also very curious about values, and you write about them as well. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on values?
Yeah, what are my thoughts? That's a great question. I think we all have values, and most of us are not sure what they are. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the best way to figure out what your value is to pay attention to your actions. Your actions will tell you if what you thought was a value truly is a value or if something that you never thought was a value is. So let's say that you're like, oh, a huge value is family. And then I'll go, okay, great. Let's look at your calendar for the last month. Did you hang out with your family? Did you contact your family? What did you do for your family? Okay, maybe you worked for your family. That's different. But it's like, what about your life has lived out this value? And then you go, nothing. Okay, then maybe it's not your top value. It can still be a value. But I think our life will tell us oftentimes what our values are. And sometimes we don't want to see it. and sometimes we need to restructure things. But values are connected to our sense of meaning. What gives us meaning? What gives us purpose? What gives us a sense of safety? And so I think if you really want to test out those values, I would say look at your calendar, see how you're spending your time. And then if you want to introduce new values that you don't see you're living, then start filling out your calendars and being deliberate about starting to actually engage in those things.
I sometimes, I was always looking for a good definition of values because there are different approaches in what is a value and what not. How do you approach that? So maybe you have some examples of what values are that I could look for. You mentioned
for sure.
Family.
Mm-hmm. Connection would be a value. So for example, let's say that you meet someone who plays a lot of video games. And you go, wow, you're wasting your life. Like, what are you doing? You know, it's so easy to be judgmental. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go, if they're spending so much time playing video games and they're chatting to people online, what are they getting? What need is being met? What value mm-hmm. is being mm-hmm. lived out? And for a lot of them, it's either escapism or connection or some combination of both. And a lot of them have these communities that they have fully built online. And they really care about them. And so when they say they're going to log on at 7, they're going to log on 7, regardless of what's happening in their life. And so to me, that's such a cool way to stop judging people for the way they live their lives. But it's also great for you to go, okay, I'm playing a lot of video games and maybe I keep telling myself I am lazy or wasting my time. But instead of saying those things, which are really unkind, figuring out that like, hey, I'm actually connecting and making friends and I feel like I belong and I'm seen and I'm heard. And all of these are really huge human needs. And that's connection is a really big value for me. And so that's kind of a fun example of something that seems so random, but actually for a lot of people holds significant legitimate value. So mm-hmm. for me, it's like, it's the things that give you meaning. It's the things that you think are of such high regard that they should be prioritized over anything else.
So it's something like a need, but it's deeper than that. It's like a really deep need that I have.
Yeah, I mean, values is, it's also your compass in a sense to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's the thing that leads you. And mm-hmm. need is like, so, you know, I was going to give a terrible example. A need is something that is necessary for your survival. Generally, I know nowadays we make preferences sound like needs, and that's not the same mm-hmm. thing. Like, you don't need to get a new car, like a brand new car. You need a safe car, but you probably don't need a $100,000 car. So preferences and needs are different. You need to feed yourself, but maybe you don't need to have a super fancy meal. You can just have toast and peanut butter. So needs and preferences are not the same thing. And I think that we confuse them sometimes. So needs is about self-preservation. It's about safety. It's about being able to continue being human. And values are what makes being human. It's why being alive is worth it. That's how I like to say it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. like, why bother?
When we look at conflict, at inner conflict, but also at conflict with other people, mm-hmm. many times or values, my values can play a role in that because I look at something totally in a totally different way than the person
for
I'm
sure.
talking to. And it's similar to the I think it's interesting for me, how can I maybe gain more clarity or more confidence in the way that I include my values, and how can I stand and act true to my values rather than maybe switching to what everyone is expecting or what the common ground is of our culture, the way that we work and behave. How do I deal with these? Those are deep conflicts, no? And conflicts where I feel like what is expected of me maybe contradicts my values. How can I navigate through these tensions?
Yeah, absolutely. So often values are defined as like the individual beliefs that motivate people's behavior. I mean, like, I think that's like the most basic definition. And other people will have different beliefs that motivate their behavior. And then you're stuck being like, well, do I listen to me or do I listen to them? Or again, it goes back to what is the right way to do it? And I think something that's incredibly important to remember is that we can't live for other people.
Yes.
We can disappoint other people for sure. But when we make decisions for others, they're often inauthentic decisions. And if we make enough of them, we're going to lose complete touch with ourselves. And we're going to be molded by their preferences, by their values, and by their morals. We're going to become a version that they have created, not a version that we have created. I think you pose a really significant question in terms of, is it worth standing up for our values? And my answer is yes. I think it's very important to stand up for yourself in general. I think that that's how you build inner safety, but also you're the only person that will know what's authentic. Sometimes people do this really lovingly. They'll go, for example, oh my gosh, you should really get married. You know, it's great security, or party, you're not going to grow old alone. You're going to have someone that loves you forever. So this input, this value, this belief comes from a really pure place because they really want you to be happy and they think that this will make you happy. So you have to understand, I think sometimes it's helpful to strip it down and be like, what is their belief? What is their value? Okay, which part of it doesn't fit with me? And understand that at the end of the day, let's say you do get married because your grandma really wanted you to get married to be safe and protected and loved. Your grandma does not have to wake up every day next to your husband. You do. So when we make these decisions for other people, we're the only ones that are living with those consequences. And it's just not worth it. And there isn't really a magic answer here besides the fact that you need to value yourself enough. You need to trust yourself enough to go, this is my journey. And if I make a mistake, it should be my mistake. It's not going to be a mistake that was caused by someone else. It needs to be my mistake. And really take ownership, because I think authenticity is ownership of life. There is no other real definition of authenticity.
Yeah, and it's such a nice way to navigate through it, because your example is so fitting. I know many people who have these discussions, especially when it comes to marriage and kids and whatever is expected, especially of women. And I can feel and I understand how this is offending and of course causes a reaction. And that's legitimate and something I understand. And at the same time, I think it is, if I don't feel that offended and I see behind what's behind this question, mm-hmm. or this wish directed towards me and my life decisions, it's a place where we can meet, because mm-hmm. I can look behind it, no? That can be very connecting and also open up room for discussion and maybe also helping the other person to maybe change the perspective on beliefs they have, which might not serve them as well. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I think it's so much vulnerability and honesty when you strip mm-hmm. it back, and then you realize that both of you really want the same thing, which is for you to be happy. And I think just then talking about the definition of that happiness can be an important next step. But I do think it helps break down some of those walls. It helps us not get as triggered. It helps us not be as reactive. It helps them not feel like we're not taking our lives seriously or that we're not caring mm-hmm. for our own happiness. And so it really helps both, as much as possible, hopefully, both individuals understand each other. And I think that that's always the key to any communication. That's always the goal of any communication.
You talked about creating yourself, and mm-hmm. also we spoke about a lot of different aspects. I can look at my beliefs, my values, the fear, how that might be connected to beliefs I have. Also about home, how I maybe can look for this feeling mm-hmm. of feeling home, asking questions, trial and error. Do you mm-hmm. have maybe some questions that you would say are the most important questions I can ask myself or everyone can ask themselves to create themselves? Or
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of my favorite questions. I have three things in my head. Let's see if I remember them all as I talk. One of my favorite questions is, what did I learn about myself today? This seems really simple, and it is, but it's really hard. In order to actually answer that question, you had to pay attention throughout the day. Mm-hmm. You can't fake this answer, because if you were completely disconnected from your body, from your mind, from your emotions, what did you learn? You'll go nothing. So it forces you to observe, and then it also forces you to understand that you're ever evolving. So you will start to notice shifts in preferences. You'll start to notice shifts in values. You'll start to notice that you're communicating differently. So it's a really cool way. I think when we're creating ourselves, observing is key. We need to be aware of like what materials we're working with. Let's say we're in a shape that we don't like, and we need to remold ourselves, or we're not even sure what shape we're starting with. Observation is really key, and that has to be open and non-judgmental, but it has to be really deliberate. It's like going on a date for the first time with someone. You are paying attention like a hawk. You are paying attention to their body language, to their laugh, to the texture of their sweater, to did they touch you accidentally or on purpose? Did they order a second drink? Did they hesitate to pay the bill? Whatever you're paying attention to, you're hyper-focused. And that is what I want people directing to themselves. And that's what you need in order to actually answer the question of like, what did I learn about myself? The second thing I want to bring up, and there's a chapter there about our body. And our body is just not part of the conversation for a lot of people. When you think about the self, people do not think the body. They think the body is something separate. It houses yourself, but it is not the self. And in my book, I really break down that separation, that your body is something you have, but it's also who you are. And so another really great question is, if my body could speak, which it does, but if my body could speak, what would it say to this circumstance, to this decision, to this person? So really, really inviting our body into the conversation. And then the third point I wanted to make, you can cut this because it's very long, but the third point I wanted to make was that every interaction with everything, with everything we have, a person, a broken laptop, a fruit can teach us something about ourselves. You learn so much by being in the world, and that's because part of all of our existence is in the world. And so I think a lot of people want to lock themselves up and really figure out who they are in isolation, but that's impossible, because who you are is the way you choose to express yourself within the world. And so I want you to use your mug as something that teaches you about you. I want you to use your pet, your door, I don't care what it is, a sunset, traffic. I want it to be a constant stream and dialogue between you and the world. I think that that's incredibly important, because the question, who am I, can never be answered with just words. It is not a cognitive answer. If I ask someone, who are you, how would you even answer that in a holistic way? You can't. The only way to answer who am I is to show me. Your life is the only answer to that question.
That's why I struggle with the word authenticity, because it's mm-hmm. it's so hard to do something with this word, because what does it even mean? I mean, mm-hmm. also because depending on, for example, who I am surrounded with, I am mm-hmm. a totally different person with this person and this person in this setting and that setting, and it's mm-hmm. all me, you know? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I can connect to that word once with your explanation.
Oh, I am very, very glad. And I think what, if you're, you know, if someone, and I love that you brought this up, I do meet individuals who are like, I feel like I'm a completely different person when I'm around my friend than my colleagues. Or, you know, you'll see someone at a party and then you'll see them at work and just be like, oh my God, how is this the same individual? And I think how I perceive being authentic or being congruent is, imagine looking at the same object, but from different angles, mm-hmm. but you still know it's the same object. It's just mm-hmm. will look different if you're out with friends, if you're at work, if you're with your family, if you're tired. But when you start to shift shapes and people are like, well, one day she looked like this. I'm pointing to my headphones for those listening. Mm-hmm. And another day she looks like a mug. This is an issue. Yeah. This is more like fragmentation. You actually don't know who you are and you're being shifted and shaped by those mm-hmm. around you. Mm-hmm. And I think if you find yourself fully acting out of character or going out and then being like, I don't even know who that person is. That doesn't even mm-hmm. resonate with me, which is an extreme version, obviously, of what you were describing. I think that's when we look at more self-loss. But having people see you from different angles and still recognize you as the same object, I think it's just being human. It means contexts are different, environments are different, and that's completely appropriate. But what matters the most, the way that you protect your shape is by always taking ownership of your actions and by showing up how you want to show up. That is the only way to keep your shape. Otherwise, you are going to change shapes and people are going to be incredibly confused.
And it helps because I'm wondering what can help me to find into this, you know, to find my shape and maybe even like grow into my shape or to create my shape, to be my shape, because I know that there are certain settings where I tend to switch to be a mug.
yeah, a little bit of a mug. That's cute. Yeah, it's okay.
You know, mm-hmm. so what helps to maybe be more stable or more
grounded, rooted.
Yeah.
Great question. So I think what's really important is who we hang out with. I have a whole mm-hmm. chapter about this. We cannot pretend that people we're with do not impact who we are. That is a delusion. I don't care how grounded you are. Eventually, you will feel that external force shaping you. And we can't choose that. As humans, we will be molded by those around you. But we have a choice of who is around us. And so if you don't like yourself as a mug and you want to be a headphone, then you need to be around people who let you be a headphone. And not just that, you need to be around people who will reflect back to you that you're a headphone. So what's hard is when you are, for example, for me, I was starting to change in my 20s. And then for years, people would still bring up stuff I did like when I was 19 or when I was in grade 7. And and people think it's cute, but it's not cute for several reasons. It wasn't cute to me. It showed me that they're not in the present moment looking at me. They looked at me 10 years ago, decided what shape I was, and then didn't bother to actually look at me again because they were like, well, she was a mug, so she must be a mug. At no point were they like, she changed shapes. Second reason why it really bothered me was because he made me confused. I was like, look at these headphones. What are you talking? Like, this is me. And they were, it would be like going in front of a mirror. It's the analogy I have in my book. You're going in front of a mirror. You think you're wearing this beautiful gown to a ball. And then everyone is laughing and telling you that you're wearing a clown suit. And you look in a mirror and you're looking down at yourself and you're like, nope, I'm wearing a gown. And then everyone is reflecting back to you that you're wearing a clown suit. And then you feel crazy because you're like, I actually don't know what I'm wearing right now. You need people who will be open enough to actually see you, see your progress, see your effort, see your authenticity, and reflect it back. If you don't find people that will do that, it is going to be almost impossible. and it's going to be incredibly painful. And so your people are so important. I can't emphasize enough how important it is who we hang out with. I know it's cliche, but it's cliche for a reason.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that I have to, for me, it's like, it doesn't have to mean that I have to cut ties and end friendship.
No.
It's more like no. I'm, yeah, because sometimes I hear these advice and I'm just, I don't know.
No. Block them. No, just kidding.
But still being very, also, it's a way of respecting and valuing yourself if you choose whom to be around, and your time and also your attention and energy is so, it's something that is ending. And it's a very self-respecting way to connect with this choice we have with people, and also being open to, because I had these, the people that had the most, and I would say positive influence on my life and showed me who I can be, you know, that helped me to find my shape of a headphone is, were people I just met. It was just random. And then we stick to each other. Yeah. And that's something it can happen at any point in life. And yeah, it's, if I have an open, not just mind, but also body and radar, or I don't know what a good picture.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. They can always cross your life, and yeah.
Absolutely. And sometimes it is easier almost because they don't have any preconceived notions. They're seeing you as you are. So for them, it might actually be easier to see that you're a headphone. For those who watch you change, it's actually sometimes harder for them to keep up, to accept the fact that you're now different, that your dynamic and relationship with them will be different. So of course, it feels so good to be known and loved for a very long time. But I just want to say, both of those can come with pros and cons. And as you said, just being really open and deliberate, and, you know, seeing who feels like home when you hang out with them.
Yeah. Ah, I love this.
Me too.
We will put your book, the German title, I will say it again. Let me see. Angekommen bei dir. Akzeptiere, was ist, entdecke dich selbst und ändere dein Leben. We will put that in the show notes. Also the English book, your Instagram, of course. Amazing. Is there any other way that people can find your work, learn more about you?
Sure. So there's my website, which is sarah-kubrick.com. I also do write short essays almost on a weekly basis because my Instagram is a bit short. My book is long. So if you want something in between, it's very existential. It's called Notes from My Phone, and it's found on Substack, which is like a blog essentially. And then lastly, if you're interested in leadership, considering of the podcast, I just created a course with Simon Sinek on how to build healthy relationships or strong relationships at work. So if you're interested, you can check out my leadership work there.
Perfect. We will put all that in the show notes. And I have one final question, because our listeners love to read. So there's your book.
Perfect.
And maybe is there a book that comes to mind that you either enjoyed recently a lot, or maybe that you always return to, that you, you know, read often or maybe gifted often?
Yeah. Ooh. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So many. Yeah. I love reading. The book I read recently was The Gay Science by Nietzsche. Loved it. I find his humor or lack of seriousness about existence sometimes very refreshing. And the book that I absolutely love is by Hermann Hesse, Damien. I'm sure you have the real title.
Damien, I think. Yeah.
Okay. that is one of my favorite books of all time. It's definitely changed. It came into my life while I felt like I was changing my shape and trying to create my sense of self. And so that really resonated. And then I pretty much love everything by Tolstoy, but there we go. Sorry, and Dostoevsky. I can't choose.
There you Thank go. You so much, Sarah, for your for this conversation and for your work. And it's I think it is really, really helpful. And because it's so I enjoyed that very much, and I'm sure that it helps a lot of people. And thank you so much.
Thank you All so much best. For asking great questions and engaging. I loved being on your show. Thank you so much.
Ich hoffe sehr, dass du aus dieser Folge ganz viel für dich mitnimmst. Eine sehr stimmige Folge, wie ich finde, ein sehr stimmiges Interview, weil der Inhalt wirklich ganz wunderbar zu der Methodik passt, die wir auch in der Female Leadership Academy anwenden. Dieses aktionsorientierte Verstehen, würde ich es mal nennen, also in der Handlung mich selbst besser kennenzulernen, im Kleinen Dinge auszuprobieren und sehr achtsam zu reflektieren und immer wieder mir auch Fragen zu stellen, auch wiederholt durchaus dieselben Fragen zu stellen, wie Sarah sie zum Beispiel genannt hat, ne? Was hast du über dich selbst heute gelernt? Oder auch, wenn mein Körper sprechen könnte, was würde er über diese Situation, über diesen Menschen, über das, was mich gerade beschäftigt, sagen? Und was hat sie noch genannt? Sie hat also drei große Fragen genannt. Jede Interaktion kann uns etwas lehren. Und wie können auch Gegenstände, Momente uns vielleicht Aufschlüsse darüber geben, was wir uns vielleicht gerade fragen, und so in einen Modus zu finden, von sich selbst zu erschaffen, sich selbst auch die Erlaubnis zu geben, immer wieder in Veränderung zu sein, ohne dabei eben verloren oder entkoppelt sich zu fühlen von sich selbst, von anderen. Das finde ich sehr stark und sehr passend. Wenn das auch mit dir resoniert, dann guck gerne mal bei der Female Leadership Academy vorbei und abonniere auch einfach gerne unseren Newsletter, denn dann bekommst du nicht nur die wöchentlichen Updates rund um den Podcast, Inhalte, Buchtipps jede Woche, sondern wirst auch auf dem Laufenden gehalten über unsere sonstige Arbeit, über kostenfreie Veranstaltungsformate, die wir haben, auch Aktionen, die wir uns immer mal wieder überlegen, und natürlich über unsere Kursen, allen voran das Female Leadership Programm, in dem du eben ganz konkret dabei begleitet wirst, jeden Tag kleine Schritte zu gehen im Kurs, und auch noch eine Gemeinschaft triffst, denn darüber hat ja Sarah auch gesprochen, who we hang out with, also die Menschen, mit denen wir Zeit verbringen, die prägen eben, was wir von uns denken, wer wir glauben sein zu können, welche Perspektiven wir vielleicht auch neu einnehmen können. Und was wir mit unserer Arbeit machen, ist genau das auch zu schaffen, nämlich neue Kontakte und Verbindungen zu Menschen. Da sind sehr viele Leute in unserer Community, mehrere tausend Frauen, die mittlerweile mit uns zusammengearbeitet haben und die du eben in kostenfreien Veranstaltungen, aber eben auch als Teil unserer Kurse moderiert und auch für dich handverlesen erkennen lernst. Und dabei geht es nicht darum, aus meiner Perspektive irgendwie jetzt so die nächsten besten Freundin zu treffen, das kann auch ein Ergebnis sein. Es geht allerdings vor allem darum, auf Menschen zu treffen, die dich nochmal ganz anders sehen, die mit denen du dich vielleicht auch nochmal anders verbinden kannst, weil ihr eben vielleicht auch beruflich vor ähnlichen Fragestellungen steht oder weil ihr auch von Erfahrungen, die ihr euch gegenseitig geben könnt, profitiert und in einen sehr wohlwollenden, verbindenden Austausch zu finden. Das ist eine unserer Aufgaben, und damit haben wir mittlerweile sehr viel Erfahrung gesammelt. Und ja, deswegen das vielleicht nochmal für dich auch, wenn es mit dir resoniert und für dich ganz spannend ist, um so ein bisschen Transparenz darüber zu schaffen, was wir noch so tun, außer diesem Podcast. Und ich sehe darin sehr große Kraft. Das ist natürlich nicht nur was du bei uns erleben kannst, sondern was du für dich selbst natürlich auch schaffst, die Menschen zu suchen, auch zu finden und zu schätzen, Zeit mit ihnen zu verbringen, die vielleicht schon da sind, und ganz bewusst zu gucken, wo fühlt es sich wie zu Hause an. Feels like home, hat Sarah gesagt, was ich sehr schön finde. So, ich könnte noch ganz viel hier zusammenfassen. Du hast das Interview ja aber auch gerade gehört und so. Ja, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören, für deine Offenheit. ganz viel gute Energie und jetzt auch so Motivation, vielleicht direkt Dinge, die Sarah gesagt hat, umzusetzen. Und ich freue mich schon, wenn wir uns die nächste Woche wieder hören. Vielen Dank fürs Dasein, dabei sein, mitmachen. Und dann bis nächste Woche. Alles Liebe, deine Vera.